listening to KUNV 91.5, and this is Neon Eden. I'm your host, J. Patrick Kulikin. You can read my columns in the Las Vegas Sun and Las Vegas Weekly. My co-host is Las Vegas Sun reporter Tovin Lapan. After all the attack ads on our TVs and on our mailboxes, after Bachman and Gingrich and the pizza CEO, after you didn't build that and the private sector is doing fine and the 47%, the election season is mercifully coming to a close. Today to preview and forecast, we're joined by TV star Elizabeth Crum. She's the co-host of The Agenda on KSNV Channel 3, the local NBC affiliate, a show that's on every weekday at 12:30. And I'm happy that I got the time right of the show this time. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me. Happy to be here.
So it's a tight race. Obama with a slight edge in the battleground states. It seems like Harry Reid will likely remain majority leader rather than go in the minority in the U.S. Senate. And the House looks like it will remain in Republican hands. To me, it looks exactly like we could have predicted 6, 8, 9 months ago. Am I wrong?
I mostly think you're right, although there was some question back in primary season before we knew who the nominee would be, and we were still all saying that this election was going to hinge on jobs and the economy, that there was a chance that Obama could be defeated. And I think at that time, a lot of Republicans were a lot more optimistic that he could be defeated. But the Obama campaign, I think, has been fairly adept at navigating not only the economic issues, but bringing some other issues into play that were not foreseeable, at least to me, that have kind of turned this race in some interesting ways.
Mm-hmm. Like, for instance, the Bain attacks that they unleashed all summer, which were kind of under the radar. I mean, I think it seemed to me that the national media thought, there was some pushback on attacking private equity, and the Obama campaign just seemed to ignore that, and they just spent heavily this summer, and they had some success defining.
Yeah, absolutely. They defined Romney pretty early, right out of the box, as this vulture capitalist with no heart and an eye only towards his own bottom line. And when you combine
and a lot of houses, and
he owns a lot of houses, Swiss bank accounts, offshore accounts in general, mm-hmm. dealings with Chinese companies, and on and on and on. And it's been interesting how the Democrats have tried to thread that needle at the same time that I see them trying to sort of build this narrative nationally about it's kind of a new economic nationalism. You hear the Democrats talking about the economy in terms of patriotism. Usually it's the Republicans who try to make everything about being a patriot or being a traitor if you don't agree with them. So I think it's been really interesting. I don't know how effective the Bain attacks on their own have been, but that too was part of a larger narrative, which is just to paint Romney as an out-of-touch guy who doesn't get the average American. And then when you start pulling in issues with immigration reform, which appeal to minorities, and all the issues with women's rights and health care and abortion and Planned Parenthood and all this other stuff, and you start cobbling all these lesser issues kind of together, you're little by little, the Obama campaign, I think, has been trying to peel away.
Well, there were a bunch of subplots that sort of fed into the larger plot.
Yeah,
from
absolutely.
From the Obama perspective.
But ultimately, it's all about how, from a Democratic perspective, Mitt Romney just doesn't get you, and he doesn't get America, and he's mm-hmm. not the right guy at this time.
Mm-hmm. And Elizabeth, how is the presidential race shaping up here in Nevada? I mean, we know the Democrats have a lead in the early voting. Is that something the GOP this time around can make up that difference on Election Day or even leading up to Election Day?
Well, we'll have to see. That right now the Democrats have about a 36,000 vote lead, raw vote lead statewide. That's about 8 percentage points. I think they'd like to be up by more. I think 60 or 70,000 raw votes going into Election Day would probably make them feel a lot more comfortable. But they've done well so far, although, to be fair to the Republicans, over the past couple days, they've either lost by less or won by a little, depending on which county you look at. But yeah, the Democrats in Clark County especially need to build up that firewall. They seem to be doing a fair job of that. And there's just no telling what's going to happen on Election Day in terms of turnout.
And has the GOP been more organized in terms of getting their voters to the polls early instead of on Election Day this year?
I would say no, but typically it's been the case historically that more Democrats turn out early and more Republicans vote on Election Day. And I'm not sure that how organized or not the Republicans are has that much to do with those numbers at this point. That's just the kind of the way it works.
Let me ask a follow-up on that question about Republican organization. You've followed the Republican Party and its interesting internal politics pretty closely since at least 2010, right? Now, they've said, at least publicly, that they have a better organization, better ground game, what have you. Is that just fluff they're putting out there? Is that just spin? Or is there actually some kind of organization occurring?
You mean in Nevada?
Yeah, in Nevada.
The organization that has occurred has been because the RNC sent troops in here, and then they pulled the sane members of the Clark County GOP and the State Central Committee into that team, this Team Nevada, as they refer to it.
They set up a de facto state party.
Basically a de facto state party, brought in a lot of the more motivated, what we call traditional Republican volunteers, kind of the old school folks, and did the best they could, I think, to cobble together a big team in a short amount of time. Now, that didn't start until June after the primary. So really the answer to your question is no. The state Republican Party, as it actually exists, is not only not more organized, it's completely defunct at this point. Mm-hmm. They're not raising any money. They're not doing anything that I can see. And part of that picture, and we were talking about this back in the primary season, is that the Ron Paulites, the Palestinians, as I jokingly call them, they took over the State Central Committee. They took over the Clark County GOP. They were all in for their guy, and when Ron Paul didn't win the nomination, they all disappeared. That none of them, next to none of them, very few of them have been lifting a finger to do anything for Mitt Romney or the Republicans in this state in general.
Yeah, it's odd. It's there's some irony, I think, because it's almost sounds like some weird power struggle within the old Soviet Union, the Nevada Republican Party. All right, let's move on. I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but I will anyway. If it goes like I think this is going to go, and Obama wins by, I don't know, 4 or 5, and Democrats continue to control the state Senate, which is obviously up for grabs, it's going to be close. And Democrats came into this, come into the election with 100,000 more voters than Republicans registered. At some point, it seems to me it's time to acknowledge that the state is at least bluish, if not blue, and not really a swing state anymore. Because I think, and this could definitely be important to how both Republicans and Democrats behave in the interim. Tell me what you think about that.
Yeah, I think it's possible that after this election, or at the very least after the next election, that Nevada won't be seen as a swing state anymore. And Patrick, we've talked about this, you know, before in different forums. A lot of that has to do with the demographic shifts in the state. Be that as it may, and it doesn't really matter why, the bottom line is that if more Democrats are winning than Republicans, then that does sort of change the state of play. The question, though, is does that embolden Democrats to actually be Democrats? You know, I know you, the progressives out there like to, you know, they joke around on their happier days and they lament on their sadder days that Nevada Democrats look an awful lot like moderate Republicans. There really isn't a lot of difference between the two. And so that, you know, progressive policies don't really get shifted up the chain of command on the Democratic side of the aisle. So possibly it'll embolden Democrats to actually be who they traditionally would be, and it might cause the Republicans to have to do some rethinking on some policy issues. In fact, I think you've seen that already in some of the state Senate races, and I know we're going to get to that later, but a lot of the state lawmakers are already, they're Republicans, they're already sort of running as quasi-Democrats or very moderate Republicans because I think they acknowledge that shift that's happening.
Uh-huh. And they may have taken their cues, and some of them are explicit about it, from Governor Sandoval, Republican, who's certainly been governing as a moderate thus far.
Yeah, Sandoval took a lot of heat from the far right on the extension of the sunsetted taxes. That was the big thing. But he speaks like a moderate at every chance, and he has a very sort of wait and see, pragmatic approach. He's definitely not trying to make any kind of waves. And I think we've seen so far as a governor that he is interested in getting deals done as he did at the close of the legislature. And so, Governor Sandoval, although he's not that active in the party structure in Nevada, he still is the de facto leader of the Republican Party. And lawmakers like Senator Roberson have taken his lead, and that's probably the most notable example because Roberson was dead set against those sunset taxes being extended. He's done a complete shift now and has gotten in line behind what the governor wants to do.
And they may be looking at Sandoval's approval rating, which is one of the highest of any governor in the country, and saying, well, maybe he's onto something there.
Yeah, you can't govern if you can't get yourself elected, and you need to be popular and have voter approval in order to do that. And I think some of the Republicans in this state have come to terms with the fact that this Tea Party energy that existed in the past and maybe even helped them a little bit in the past, you know, may have seen its better days, and that it's okay now to kind of move back and be a moderate.
And moving on to the Senate race between Congresswoman Democrat Shelley Berkley and the incumbent Dean Heller, we have Berkley with her House Essex investigation hanging over her head, and that seemed like that would be a big problem, but didn't move polls maybe necessarily as much as some people imagined. And she's kept a close race, and we're wondering if Obama and the Reid machine will help drag her across the finish line and push her ahead.
It's possible, and so the big question, I think that is going to be probably the most interesting thing that we watch on election night. I do think Obama's ahead enough, even if we're wrong about him being up by 5 or 6, I think he's going to pull it off. But is he far enough ahead to help the down-ticket candidate, starting with Berkley? The polls, I believe, right now show Heller and Berkley virtually tied, and that if Obama wins the state by 5 or 6, Heller could eke it out. So I'm thinking probably, and it's hard to predict these things, but Obama might need to win by 7 or 8 or even more than that in order for Berkley to pull off a win. Having said that, the polls are tight, and as you said, those ethics issues just haven't gotten traction the way we might have expected. I don't know if Nevadans are just immune to the idea of a corrupt politician to the point that it doesn't really even faze them anymore. But she's done a pretty good job of holding her own in a race that we didn't think was going to be this tight.
Do you think part of that had to do with the spin that the campaign put on in terms of, hey, we needed a kidney center, and maybe focusing on that part of the ethics issue, and that was something that the electorate, I guess, bought into, that the hey, she was doing what was right for her constituents?
I think it's possible. I mean, that's the narrative that she wove. And if you read the original New York Times story, there's actually a lot more to this ethics stuff than just that kidney center. But a lot of voters' eyes start to glaze over, you know, if you get too far down that rabbit hole of trying to pick apart each and everything she did that could be up for criticism. And so I think that's part of the problem the Heller campaign had, you know, was giving enough detail to try to convince voters without giving too much to the point that you're losing them and they're just kind of rolling their eyes and not paying attention anymore. And then Berkley, too, you know, she's done what the Democrats do so well, which is appeal to these, you know, specific voter groups, whether it's veterans or seniors or Hispanics. You know, she has done a great job, I think, of trying to show how she is all about being for all of those groups in a way that's, you know, obviously been somewhat convincing based on where the polls are.
It seems like that race could come down to, well, I think you're right. If Obama, if his margin is 5 or 6, then she might have trouble if it's 7 or 8. You know, that's presumably because of Democratic turnout. And that'll be, now the other problem I see with her is, and not just her, but Democrats down the ticket, how many voters go in and they just hit Obama and walk out?
That's a good question. And the further you get down the ticket, the more races get skipped. And so the less likely the coattail effect.
Right.
You're right, Patrick.
So how lazy are Nevada Democrats? Will they stick around for that second line on the ballot? That will be, I think, the race that we'll all be watching on election night.
I think so, too.
All right. Couple House races that are important, and at least one of them, I think, probably will be close, and that's State Senate Majority Leader Stephen Horsford. He's struggled to break away from Danny Tarkanian, who in the past has been a perpetual Republican candidate. He, of course, is the son of the legendary basketball coach. And Horsford has struggled. He's losing again in a public poll, despite the district having far more Democrats than Republicans. What are your thoughts?
Well, if you believe this recent poll, Horsford's problem is that he's only winning 77% of Democrats, I believe, and Tarkanian's winning almost close to 100% of Republicans. And assuming that Indies are split or only lean slightly one way or the other, that's a problem. Mm-hmm. He's got to shore up his base much better than that. And I think it's notable and remarkable, really, that Tarkanian's been able to make inroads in that district with Democrats. But in a way, that's sort of been the past Republican complaint against him. I mean, even though Horsford's trying to paint him as a Tea Party guy, he's not a Tea Party guy. He comes from a pretty moderate political family, you know, starting with his mom, Lois Tarkanian. I don't think anybody believes that he's a fire-breathing Tea Partier.
Well, he tried to be for one cycle.
Well, it was convenient to do so in the primary when you're trying to get to the right of Sharon Angle in order to win a primary, which is almost impossible. So, yeah, and he's, you know, he's done some political shifting, certainly, as he's tried to get himself elected. I have to give Horsford his due, and maybe this will work out for him in the end, is that, you know, he's a proud Democrat. He's run as one. I think he's the only candidate on Nevada television that actually uses the word Democrat and Democratic in his television advertising. He stands up for what he believes in. Voters know exactly who he is. He does have a record up in Carson City. Part of Horsford's problem, unfortunately, is that he's made some missteps over the years into a couple of, you know, ethical gray areas. And I think that too may have hurt him as voters try to make up their minds between these two candidates. I think Horsford has a chance on election day, even though these polls don't look good for him, in part because of the type of campaign he's running, in part because of the down ticket effect that we're talking about with Obama.
Getting dragged across the line by President Obama.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder what is going through the minds of Democrats in that district who are not supporting him. I mean, that is some parts of that district, very old school, urban core Las Vegas, kind of lifer Las Vegans, who maybe remember the glory days of Jerry Tarkanian.
I think that could be part of it. Frank Hawkins, who's very active in the NAACP here in Las Vegas, endorsed Tarkanian early on and has been out there on the ground with boots and people campaigning for Tarkanian. That's probably cut into Horsford's support a little bit as well.
Mm. Go ahead, Tobin. Sorry.
I was just so then the other race, we obviously have the Asagara and Joe Heck race, Asagara being the state assemblyman and Joe Heck the incumbent. But right now it seems like Heck might be pulling away, and that won't be one of the closer races in the state.
These congressional districts can be tough to pull, especially because the lines just changed because of the census. But I think the biggest indicator in that race right now, I think John Ralston reported either yesterday or early this morning that Asagara has pulled back some of his ad buys by about half. If you're pulling ads off the air in the final week of campaign, there's not too much we can assume from that other than you're probably throwing in the towel.
Or he's so confident of his victory.
Yeah, I don't think that's the case. This is what's most interesting to me about this Asagara hack race. I always believed before they put Asagara up that Heck was vulnerable, and I thought that it was possible that this is one that the Democrats could steal back from the Republicans. In fact, I think the DCCC did put it on their list of winnable target House races. John Asagara, frankly, has just not been a great candidate. We could do a whole show on all the ways in which he has not been a great candidate. So I think Joe
Dina Titus might have beaten Heck in a rematch.
Well, yeah, she may well have.
She chose a safer district.
Right. She's got Dina Titus has a congressional seat for life. God bless her. And I'm sure she's happy to be heading back to Washington, D.C. But yeah, I think a better Democrat might have had a shot at taking Joe Heck out. But I think Heck's going to be just fine on election night.
Well, let's talk about you have two Democratic legislators trying to step up and win congressional seats. Both have had, I think, more or less success than maybe they thought or anybody else thought. To me, this serves as a lesson that running out of the legislature is not necessarily a good idea. In terms of, you know, I think they go up there, and you've been up there, and they think that they're with the movers and shakers, and things are happening in Carson City, and the reality is down here where it matters, nobody knows who these people are.
Right. I was just going to say, I think that, you know, when you're somebody with a capital S up in Carson City and the news cycle revolves around you for 5 months, I mean, that's all we do and talk about and write about for that time period, you do get in a little bit of a bubble where mm-hmm. you just tend to think, oh, you know, everyone knows who I am. So, Patrick, I think that's a great point. When you actually go back home to your own district, mm-hmm. the average voter not paying yeah. a lot of attention probably to what's going on in Carson City or who the so-called movers and shakers are. Then again, I don't know where else you pull congressional candidates from if it's yeah. not out of the state legislature.
Running from the county commission's never been a good idea either.
No, it hasn't. Yeah. We're also waiting to see what Steve Sisolak's going to do. But I, as far as I'm aware, you know, he and Christian Kiliani are the only two that have aspirations to maybe move into something else off that commission.
Mm-hmm. Well, having a famous last name is always a good start to
yeah, it doesn't
office,
hurt.
Right? And you know, obviously there's been a lot made this year, magazine covers of how Latinos will be the deciding factor. And in Nevada, a state like this, it definitely is, you know, they're 15% of the electorate, and so they can swing election for sure. And, you know, in 2004, W. Bush did well among Hispanics, but then 2008, Obama pretty much owned that demographic. And do you see the GOP making any inroads? How do you think Romney will do among Hispanic voters? And are they setting up the structure to maybe take back some of those numbers?
I think Romney would can be happy if he can win 30% of Hispanics in Nevada, and I'm not even sure he can hit that. The bottom line, although Republican operatives love to say that immigration reform is not the key or the only issue on the minds of Latino voters. They care about the economy and jobs. That's true. They also care about education and health care, though. And I think the Democrats are kind of winning the hearts and minds of Latinos on the basis of health care reform and spending money on education and helping these folks get their kids educated, and then also on immigration reform. The Republican Party has moved considerably to the right in the area of immigration reform. A lot of Republicans and Tea Partiers, especially people who are new to the political scene, forget that Ronald Reagan was very moderate, in fact, mm-hmm. proposed an amnesty program back then, and that was just part of it was just assumed at that time in national politics that that was what needed to be done, and everyone agreed on that. So the Republicans taking this tack now with what's going on in Arizona and other states, bless their little hearts if this is what they really believe, but it's not going to help them with Latinos, and they're going to suffer in states where a Hispanic population is growing as it is here in Nevada.
Could this election be a wake-up call? I mean, will Republicans, people like Brian Sandoval, but Republicans in Colorado and New Mexico and Arizona say, hey, to the folks back east, we need to smarten up here?
I think yes, because I think, you know, pragmatism always wins out in the end. Ideology only goes so far, but when you're getting your butt kicked in an election time after time after time and you can trace it back to that Hispanic demographic, yes, at some point, if Republicans want to be in office, if they want to be part of the governing class of this state and this country, I think they're going to have to moderate their views on immigration, at least to get on board with stuff like the DREAM Act, which is, you know, a very small little piece of what needs to be done on immigration here, for goodness sake. Just, you know, helping kids who are in school and people who have signed up in the military, you know, maybe have a pathway to citizenship. So, yes, I don't think the Republicans have anywhere to go but to a more moderate position on immigration in this country.
We shall see after this election. All right, let's move to the state legislature. And we've spent a lot of time talking about the races at the top of the ticket, but these races may actually have more impact on people's everyday lives. Sad as that may sound. But there are five key races, and Republicans need to win four. If they do so, they will take control of the state Senate. The assembly is going to stay in Democratic hands. So Republicans are really hoping, and a bunch of lobbyists I know, are really hoping Republicans will take one House so that they can balance off the Democrats in the legislature. Let's go through them. Justin Jones is the Republican. He's a Democrat. He has been an attorney for Las Vegas Sands. He takes on St. Martin.
Yeah, Mary St. Martin, she actually worked for Joe Hock for a while on his campaign, and then they moved her over to the Republican Party as a spokesperson or the communications director. She's upside down 7 or 8 points in that district, so there's a strong Democratic advantage.
How'd that happen?
It happened in part because the lines were redrawn with redistricting, but it was already a Democratic advantage district before that.
Okay, and let's move on to Mark Hutchinson, who was the lead. He's an attorney. He was the lead attorney in fighting Obamacare here in Nevada. He takes on Benny Yerushalmi, who runs his family business, right?
Yep.
Pretty prominent family, and he's a well-educated guy. That's a pretty good race.
It is. They're two very well-qualified candidates, two very nice guys. They've been cordial to each other in interactions and debates. They're both good candidates. I think they'd both be good lawmakers, and it's almost a shame that they're running against each other in this district as opposed to, running against weaker candidates in another district. I think the Democrats have about a 5-point advantage in that district. That's not insurmountable. For Hutchinson. He has stayed away from talking about Obamacare. He too has kind of gone to the center talking about funding for education and smaller class sizes and being all about families and for the community. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. I think he can pull it off.
Steve Kirk, who's a Henderson City Councilman, taking on Joyce Woodhouse. She had been in the state Senate. She was beaten in 2010.
Yeah, they're both well-known entities in Southern Nevada and in their districts. I think Kirk has a slight voter registration advantage down there, so it does lean Republican, so that gives him the edge in that race. It was interesting to watch these two candidates debate. They agreed on virtually every issue. Every time Kirk said he stood for something, Woodhouse basically said me too. So I'm not sure how voters begin to differentiate there. But I, again, just based on registration, I'd give Kirk the edge.
Okay. Scott Hammond, who was in the assembly, and Kelly Ross, that is Steve Ross, Las Vegas City Councilman's wife.
Yeah, she came out of the box. She's a Democrat, but she came out calling herself very conservative, made a joke about toting guns up to Carson City. I don't think a lot of Democrats were that thrilled with that. Maybe that's obviously what she thought she needed to do to compete with Hammond, who is an extremely conservative candidate in that district. He can afford to be because the Republicans are up by about a point in terms of registration. He's well-known because he was an assemblyman, and so some people in that district know him from before. So I think, he could get beat, but he's probably got a little bit of an edge going into Election Day.
And the final race that may decide the control of state Senate, that is up in Reno. That's Greg Brower, who's the sitting state senator. Sorry, he's a former U.S. attorney. And Sheila Leslie, who had been in both the Assembly, where she was in leadership, and then in the Senate. She resigned her Senate seat so that she could, it was redrawn so that she could take on Brower. It's a tough race.
It is a tough race. It's probably the most closely contested. More money has been raised and will be spent up close to $1 million in the state Senate race. So I think that's a record for state races. Brower and Leslie started off in the Assembly back in 99 together for a little while before he went on, as you said, to become a U.S. attorney. He's an incumbent, but he didn't win his seat. He was appointed to it when the late Senator Raggio resigned. And so Sheila Leslie, being very well known up there in Reno, even though she moved into a new district, it's such small town politics up there. Everybody knows her. She's putting up a fight. She's been up on TV with all kinds of different ads, some of them touting her own Democratic credentials, some of them going after Brower on things like, being absent at legislative meetings during the session last year. So she's putting up a fight. It'll be really interesting, and I think this is the race that it all hinges on, the Republican control or not of the state Senate.
All right, that'll be fun to watch on election night. We want to thank Elizabeth Crum. She's a TV star on KSNV Channel 3, The Agenda. It's on at 12:30. I want to thank my co-host, Tovin LePan, our producer, Steven Zeller. You've been listening to Neon Eden on KUNV 91.5. Catch us next week for a special post-election show.